But there's always been some kind of guardrails on it, right? The courts have stepped in 2010, 2011, that redistricting, the courts have stepped in. This time, I mean, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court didn't step in because they actually drew the maps. They appointed Chancellor Nordberg, who in his infinite wisdom, drew these maps, right? And really caused the chaos that we right now have in the Pennsylvania State House.
Welcome to Talking with Doyle, the podcast that gets State Representative Doyle Heffley talking. Doyle, we have a little bit of a different feel here in the podcast studio today. We are joined by a guest, Mike Heckman. Why don't you explain why Mike is here today? Because I wasn't on the last podcast where we brought in Mike.
Mike Heckman is the executive director of the State Government Committee here for the House Republican Caucus and really is an expert in redistricting. And after we did the last podcast, I really wanted to dive in and follow up a little bit more on some of the things that we talked about.
Perfect. Yeah, so State Government Committee has a lot of areas of purview, but one is redistricting as a reform concept, and then also every 10 years when we redistrict for congressional maps. The State Government Committee is where those bills are run through. So I've been here for one of those processes, and I've been here for really now at this point 8 years of pretty consistent discussion of redistricting reform as it's been an increasing both state and national topic. And you see it again this summer, sort of untraditionally in a mid-decade redistricting cycle that's happening across the country.
And House Bill 31 has been introduced. And I got a couple of folks that said, "Oh, that you know, I should jump on this as a co-sponsor. It's going to, you know, create this bipartisan redistricting." Although there's some flaws with this bill, and something we touched on last time was proportionality. If you could explain what that is and how we got to this issue.
Absolutely. So the headline often from advocates that are involved in House Bill 31 and many predecessor bills of it in the past is about a citizens commission, a nonpartisan approach versus a politician-driven process that we have or officeholder-driven process that we have currently. That's a change that's happened in a lot of states nationwide. The most in the news for that recently has been it complicates California's effort to redistrict in mid-decade because they do have a citizens commission in their constitution where, for instance, Texas does not. So Texas could just pass a bill to redraw their maps. California is going through a referendum process to temporarily overturn their citizens commission. That's the top line. That's what they discuss a lot, is making it a citizens commission. What the bill itself actually does, though, more importantly, in my opinion, is it changes the constitutional criteria of what an allowable redistricting plan would be. And it does that in part by enshrining proportionality as a requirement of a redistricting plan, which is not currently the case.
Proportionality isn't in the Constitution. This is something that was just kind of invented, or it was a kind of a scheme to get maps to look a certain way.
Right, and so just to give a little bit further background, proportionality is only really possible as a map-wide metric. You don't talk about an individual district being proportional or a handful. It's how is your entire mapping plan and the outcomes of it, are they proportional to the vote or not? And there are proportional democracies in the world. Spain and Germany are probably the two easiest examples. When parties run, people vote for a party, and that party gets the percentage of seats largely that matches their vote in the elections and in the whole nation. So you often have small parties getting 7-8% of the vote. They get 7-8% of the seats. America has a representative democracy. Our elected officials run in individual districts, and that design of a democracy is really actively hostile to proportionality. If you win 50 plus 1% of the votes in a district, you get the entire seat, and the person or the party that almost won doesn't get any votes at all out of those out of the votes of the public. They don't get any votes in the elected body. So something that you've seen in probably the last 15 or 20 years, this really was an invention of some academics in universities thinking and talking about redistricting, came up with these ideas of partisan fairness, which is the language that's used in House Bill 31 to codify proportionality.
But partisan fairness isn't democracy. partisan fairness is catering to one partisan group. It's not about the individuals. It's not about the candidates going out working that, you know, working their district, going out knocking on doors and representing to their best of the ability that the people that they want. This is a system where partisan politicians, Democrat or you know parties, design the maps to suit them, not the people.
Right, and as you said, the way that our democracy in America is designed, you're not elected. You're elected with a party in your election, but then you vote individually how you feel is best to vote for your constituents.
And it's worked for, we're coming up with 250 years, the greatest nation on earth, right? So this system has worked. Well, there's always flaws in it, right? But as a representative of the district that I represent, I reflect the values of the folks in my district. And I was born and raised there, and most of my colleagues were as well. And I take that perspective, whether I'm in the caucus with the Republicans or whether I'm working across the aisle with Democrat members, as I have on some occasions, and working to see what is best, what is the interest of not the party, but the people that I represent. Mm-hmm. Proportionality really takes that away. And right. It really is something that, you know, the academic elite have dreamed up, and is causing a lot of chaos in our system right now. You know, at the federal level, we don't have a budget. At the state level, we don't have a budget now. 3 months out, these how they draw these maps have consequences for everyday citizens.
Right, right, and so as you said, gerrymandering and redistricting have been phenomenons in America for 250 years now. For most of that time, the concern with gerrymandering was that it would be made specifically, we're going to draw this district for this guy who's going to run. It's made specifically for
or gal.
Or gal, right? and it had more to do with we're going to cut up this town because the person in charge of the map doesn't like this town specifically. They're going to disadvantage that town's voters. It's really been a recent creation of, as you said, academics to look at a mapping plan and to talk about gerrymandering as a partisan fairness concept. And that has some specific implications in Pennsylvania in particular because, like all states, we have a particular political geography where voters live in Pennsylvania who they tend to vote for, the parties they tend to support. And I did bring some graphics here. I always point to these. 538 was New York Times election data organization back in, it was started by Nate Silver. This was back in the mid 2010s. This was probably their peak. It's now closed down, but they did a project in 2018. They called the Atlas of Redistricting. And so they went to all 50 states and they designed the best possible map for a couple of different motivations. So the best possible Democratic gerrymander, the best possible Republican gerrymander, a map that would prioritize competitive elections, a map that would make compact districts, and a map that would be proportional, that would be have partisan balance in those academic definitions. And so just to show you and I think we might pull these up above, but the map that is the best possible Democratic gerrymander looks like this. You know, you can see it has some kind of crazy districts to try to catch voters across the state. And the map that's proportional is actually the exact same map. At the time that 538 went and looked at this data, the best possible Democratic gerrymander in Pennsylvania was the same map as one where your highest priority was proportionality. And while, you know, political geography has shifted and it will always shift, that's still largely the case. And so when you see a bill like House Bill 31 proposing a changed approach to redistricting, the changed approach matters to some degree, but it's really the changed requirements and the changed metrics. And by putting proportionality as a constitutional demand, no matter who draws the maps, you have to draw a Democratic gerrymander.
And the reason why, looking at proportionality, why a bill like this, while it's well intended, there's the poison is in the bill, right? To allow for this proportionality to go, but it doesn't matter if it's an independent group or a partisan group that's designing it. Proportionality is going to get the same results, and that proportionality really causes people to be underrepresented. Mm-hmm. So in the last episode, you talked a little bit about the numbers. So how many folks are of elective that can actually vote in a district. So each one of the House districts in the State House has about 65,000 people.
Yes.
But yet, you know, the way the proportionality, redrawing how the prison. So if you're in prison, you get to, you know, a lifer in prison, you could still vote in another city, in another county halfway across the state, or be not even vote there, but be represented there to be in that count, which doesn't really make any sense at all because you're using the infrastructure and everything where you're housed, right? If the prison is in a Schuylkill County, for example, you're using the water, the infrastructure and everything there. But that aside, proportionality really, in my mind, is very undemocratic.
Yeah, and that was, I would say, a parallel conversation in the same time period that a lot of academics were coming up with the idea of partisan fairness and advocating for that in America's system. You had a lot of advocates, particularly among Democrats, talking about prisoners and where they're represented under a redistricting plan. And you had a number of states, and now Pennsylvania is one of them, that reassign the numerical weight of those prisoners, whether or not they're able to vote. In many states, they can't. But reassigning them to their home district for representative purposes as you draw the map.
And what they did was they just put more people in certain districts, so they put more, created more House seats in certain areas.
Right. And to be fair, that is also, as big of a conversation as that's been in the Democratic Party, it's not a large number of people.
No.
Because there just aren't that many people in prison. Mm-hmm. In comparison, there are a lot of non-eligible voters there, whether they are non-citizens or under the age of 18. So there's a census data point called citizen voting age population, and it deviates quite heavily from the total population of some of the districts in Pennsylvania. The data, I didn't have it in front of me today, but from last time, there are House seats with about half as many citizen voting age residents as some other House seats or as the general average. That's not something that was the case 60 or 70 years ago when we started drawing modern districts and modern redistricting. That's a new phenomenon. And I think I mentioned one of the changes, that change at the time in the 60s and 70s to modern redistricting, that arose because there had been a large discrepancy in the representation of cities versus rural areas as many Americans in the first half of the 20th century moved to cities. The system took some time to adjust, and the Supreme Court finally ruled that, you know, for instance, in many states, the Senate was one seat per county. They finally struck those things down because they had been such a big discrepancy in really representation that Americans have. Now I think there is some discussion federally, and there are some ongoing lawsuits in one way or another that poke at the idea that we've now developed for the first time in modern history some really large communities of non-citizens that are concentrated that then leave the citizens in their political district with an outsized amount of the vote, right? They might be voting along with only 30,000 people for a House seat that has 60,000 residents. Whereas in your district, there's probably 57,000 citizens of voting age in your 65,000 person district. So that's an inequality that I think you may see more interest in. You're starting to see some discussion of putting citizenship question on the census that would help states, if they chose to redistrict on that basis, that would help them do that.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, non-citizens can't vote.
Right.
But non-citizens are counted in how they draw. So they are essentially having a larger voice because they're getting the folks that are citizens in that area are having a larger voice in Harrisburg.
Right.
Because they're counting those numbers, the same like with the prison. So with that said, I mean, what we had here is in the last redistricting and how proportionality was used to gerrymander the districts. We talked last time about how there were about 14 Republican House districts that were condensed, that were put together. Mm-hmm. So right off the bat, you know, they were taken out a large swath of Republican representatives. And then on top of that, what they did in the urban areas is they instead of keeping those areas, you know, together, they broke them all up so they would come into the city of Philadelphia or Reading or Allentown or Pittsburgh or and they would pull a population out of there, maybe 60% or whatever, and then they would go into the urban or the rural areas and loop in the rest of those folks. To the point where it created Democratic districts and really diluted, the voices of the rural Pennsylvanians, so much to the point that I think it was the 2022 election cycle, 450,000 more votes were received by the Republican candidates than the Democrat candidates. Mm-hmm. So, for example, so if you look, it's, you know, statewide, 450,000 more people that voted in a year when Josh Shapiro won overwhelmingly the gubernatorial election. The Republicans still lost the state house because of how the maps were drawn to silence the voice of Pennsylvanians.
Right, and as you said, when you pursue that proportionality, or when you draw any map and your main concern is who sits in the majority in Harrisburg or in D.C., what you end up doing is you overlook or you ignore the needs and the interests of communities themselves. And so you do split cities, you do draw rural areas in with cities that don't have similarities in socioeconomic or cultural ties. One place I point a lot with this current map is Pittsburgh. The city of Pittsburgh in 1970, when we first drew modern lines, it was a much larger percentage of the state's population, and so it needed 9 seats in the House. Well, in the 2021 redistricting cycle, there was a lot of rhetoric around, well, the rural areas have shrunk, that's why we're drawing these members in rural seats together, that's where we're adjusting our map for changed population. Really, 4 of the 10 fastest shrinking districts in the state with the smallest population in that time period were Democratic-held seats in the city of Pittsburgh. And the city of Pittsburgh now, with just around 300,000 people, it doesn't even need 5 full seats in the city. Well, after that process, there are still 9 seats that include part of the city of Pittsburgh. And the fastest growing areas of that region are generally more Republican-leaning areas that were represented by Republican members of the House in 2020. And some of those members were drawn into unwinnable seats, were drawn together in order so that they could have still those 9 seats that are part of the city of Pittsburgh.
And really what it's done is, I mean, there's always been a level of gerrymandering. Mm-hmm. This goes back to when did the gerrymander?
Jerry was the guy's name, yeah, in Massachusetts. Eldridge or some old-fashioned. Massachusetts in the 1790s.
Yeah, so this has always been around. But there's always been some kind of guardrails on it, right? The courts have stepped in 2010, 2011, that redistricting, the courts mm-hmm. have stepped in, and other courts across the state. This time, I mean, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court didn't step in because they actually drew the maps. They right. appointed Chancellor Norberg, mm-hmm. who in his infinite wisdom, drew these maps, right, mm-hmm. And really caused the chaos that we right now have in the Pennsylvania State House. I mean, it's divided. You can hardly find anybody to really work with on meaningful, you know, big issues. And in my tenure here, the way the maps were drawn early on, there were a lot of Democrats and Republicans who could work together, people that, you know, that were pragmatic, that could look at things. And now we've just packed districts so far to the left and so far to the right. And you see it, right? You see it on the news. You see it on the House floor with some what happened last week on the floor. And it really has gotten to be, people like to say a threat to democracy. Mm-hmm. This is a threat to democracy.
Right.
You know, having 22,000 voting age people in a district and having, you know, 65,000 or 57,000 in another, mm-hmm. you know, and they knew that. Right. And that's what really, really bothers me about it. It's why I wanted to bring you back and talk a little bit more about what happened in that redistricting, why we're in the shape we're in now, and what role the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, who did this. So if you're looking at court action to kind of resolve this, like in the past, courts were always, you know, kind of looked at the Constitution and the justice was blind. Well, that's right. not the case with this. They drew the maps. They did it in 2016, 2017 when they redrew the congressional maps, and we've seen that kind of a prelude to what they did this time around.
Right.
So it really is important that Pennsylvanians understand what this court did mm-hmm. and what the gerrymandering. I mean, look, the Speaker of the House in a press conference when asked before the redistricting even took place, how are you going to win back the majority? She joked and said redistricting.
Right.
And she was right. It's a one-person majority, and it really has created an issue here where we're having not a whole lot of partisanship and not a whole lot of results getting done for
right.
the Pennsylvanians.
And that's a good point, that when I said you have to have a priority in redistricting and you have to make trade-offs. You have to neglect some priorities to pursue others. One of the priorities in the 538 project, one of the priorities you could approach in redistricting is having competitive elections, having a large number of swing seats, having, you know, districts that are purple rather than districts that are red or blue. and the current House map in Pennsylvania, in order to pursue that Democratic majority, it really sacrificed a lot of those swing seats. And so you take the urban centers, where I'll use Harrisburg as an example since we're here. There used to be one blue seat that encompassed Harrisburg itself and Steelton and some very dense urban areas. And then there were 3, 4, 5 very swingable, true purple seats in the East and West Shore suburbs. And now there are 3 very blue seats that are either in Harrisburg or right outside of it. And you go immediately to slightly purple to somewhat, in some directions, very red seats immediately outside of those 3 blue seats in the city. And so you have lost across the state dozens of swingable competitive districts.
And we lost a ton of really good legislators, people that I had worked with over the years, districts historic, that had ties to the communities where they represented, the close-knit communities. And it is sad. Look, nothing in politics is ever permanent. We'll continue to work on this. But I think it's important that as people, they hear about redistricting and gerrymandering, that you really understand what happened this last cycle to put us in a situation we're in now. Andrew, how do we do?
I think we did okay. One question I have a takeaway from this, Doyle, is just listening to this conversation, is that we talk about losing seats and losing legislatures, and maybe this is a question for Mike, and then Doyle, you can respond. In Carbon County, where do we stand on redistricting? Carbon County is one of the counties here in Pennsylvania where it's just one county, so it's not split up. Mm-hmm. And maybe, Mike, you talked about this a little bit. We see all these pieces of legislation. There is some support. There's national conversation surrounding redistricting. Where does this impact specifically for Doyle, Carbon County?
Yeah, so, I mean, in the current maps, as you said, it's a county that's mm-hmm. fortunate to be whole in its representation. I think as political coalitions have shifted recently and as you look in future decades, a concern about proportionality given where Carbon County is, its current politics and its geography in Pennsylvania. You're right near the Lehigh Valley that's growing in the southeast that is growing. And as some map makers may look to draw a more proportional map, instead of being kept whole, it may be a target to grab some more votes to pull them into a bluer district.
And it was in the past. I mean, so we had in the previous cycle, actually the population was a little bit higher. We had to lose one borough. We were fortunate in getting that borough back to keep it whole again. With that, if you look at U.S. Congress, I mean, it was cut in half by the courts. Mm-hmm. They cut the district in half and really lessened the voice of Carbon County. Keeping Carbon County full has always been all in one district, whether it be congressional or House, has been key, because at 65,000 people, if you start dividing that up, there'll be no voice, yeah. Right? There'll be no voice for strictly Carbon County. And I look at that and I feel, as hard as I work for the district and the folks that I represent, I know there are a lot of folks that did that in those districts, and those districts were diluted and gone for no other reason than this, right. Partisan gerrymandering under the guise of proportionality, mm-hmm. and a lot of people in this Commonwealth. And you think about it. So what is the importance of it? Whether it be your highways, your bridges, your roads, school districts, somebody that voice to fight for them. And that's why it's so key. But we are running up against the clock. We do have somebody else is going to be coming in and trying to utilize our studio.
Yeah.
We'll have to make sure that we take down the Talking with Doyle signs off the brick walls. So,
yeah.
But Mike, thank you so much for
Absolutely.
Coming in here.
Yeah.
Your wealth of knowledge, and we might even elaborate on this a little bit. And thank the viewers for tuning in.
Anytime.
Yeah, and of course, if always this has been a Talking with Doyle podcast. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the subject, so you can leave them in the comments below to keep the conversation going.